Today's show is brought to you by KickUp. KickUp helps leaders ask the right questions to get actionable data, visualize information to guide effective next steps, and track teacher growth over time. Learn more at kickup.co. This fall's top conference for educators and leaders is the What Great Educators Do Differently conference. It'll be held October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. See speakers like Jeff Zoll, Ken Williams, and Lavana Roth, all past guests here on the show. Register today at WGEDD.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Today on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, I talk with my friend Butch Bella, who teaches us the importance of first impressions and how to speed up that process, why you should script everything, and how it helps you overcome objections. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And a great gift idea for those that have a significant other. Believe me, this is going to get you big time points. Thanks for listening. I love you. No, seriously, I do. Thanks for listening. Well, hey, Better Leaders, I am so excited to be here with somebody I call a friend now, Butch Bella, and we'll get into how we met and all that, and you're going to love this episode. But in terms of his bio, he's the owner of B2 Training and Development, where he works with salespeople and organizations to gain more appointments, win more business, and retain more customers. From his corporate job at 21, it took Butch only 4 years to be promoted to division sales manager, then another short 5 years to vice president of sales. At 35, he and a business partner acquired controlling interest in the company he'd helped build from a $35 million local business to one of the largest wholesale food distributors in the nation with annual sales almost $250 million. During his rapid ascent to sales and financial success, Butch also spent 10 years as a professional stand-up comedian, which I love that, honing not only his public speaking skills, but enjoying what he calls the best sales training I ever received. In May 2009, Butch underwent triple bypass heart surgery at 43 years old, complete cardiac rehab, and ran his first 5K 190 days after surgery. He's since completed dozens of 5Ks, two 10Ks, and two half marathons. He's written two books, The 10 Essential Habits of Sales Superstars, Plugging into the Power of 10, and Sales Management for Dummies. So welcome, Butch. Love that you're here with us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast.
Daniel, thank you so much, buddy. It is great to talk to you again. It's been too long.
Yeah, so, you know, we're connected. I talk a lot about Aaron Walker and the masterminds that I'm in, and that's how I got to know Butch. I interviewed him on my other podcast called View from the Top podcast, and then we got to meet face-to-face, and I think it was called Satin, Texas, which is in right. The middle of nowhere outside of Dallas, and we just had a blast. I asked Butch here because he's just a genuinely amazing guy, and you're probably thinking, listen, I'm in school. Why are we listening to a sales professional? Well, the fact is, if you've read Dan Pink's work, you know, he talks about motivation and influence, and he argues that everybody's in sales. If you're a leader, you're in the business of sales and influence and persuasion, and there's nobody better than Butch. He gave an amazing presentation down in Texas about I'll let you describe it. You know, you're going to get into it, but the moment you make a decision and when that moment actually is. So I know you guys are going to get a ton of value from this episode. So, but, you know, let's start here. Like, how did you get into sales? Why did you get into it?
That's a great question. It's really the only thing I've ever known, Daniel. I was blessed at an early age to find, I guess, my calling in life. And my first sales job, I was probably 10 years old selling grit newspapers back in the 70s. And it was when other kids were getting comic books and ordering spider rings or x-ray glasses, I was in the back looking at the ads where, you know, hey, wait a minute, you mean I can buy this grit newspaper for 50 cents a copy? I can sell it for a dollar and I get to keep the difference? So I was into making money at an early age, and found out that didn't have to be 16 or 18 or 20 years old to get a sales job. I could go sell at 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah, that's amazing. And obviously from the bio, you've had tremendous success as a salesperson. You know, what are some of the traits that help you be successful? And can you, you know, relate that to somebody who's leading a school and why that matters even in their position?
Sure. I think that, you know, and you talked about the years of doing stand-up comedy. I think that that's one of the places where I've found most people get kind of an aha moment. I went into stand-up comedy because I was that guy everybody always said, oh, you ought to do comedy. And I went up for an open mic night in the bug bit, and it was just like, you know, a rocket ship ride. So for 10 years, I was every weekend, I was off headlining clubs and, you know, doing colleges and so forth. And I knew I was getting great public speaking training. I had no idea at the time while I was in the midst of it. I really didn't realize what a great sales training it was. But you think most people go to a comedy club to laugh. And I got news for you. They're sitting there with their arms crossed going, okay, fat boy, tell me one. And it's a challenge. And most leaders face that same challenge. And you have just a whisper, just a moment to win people over. And I got really, really good at that first impression, at that first rattle out of the box of gaining people's trust and I guess showing the genuine Butch to them. And you know, people talk about in sales, they buy from who they know, like, and trust. Well, it's easy to get to know Butch. It's sometimes easy to like Butch. It takes a long time to trust people or Butch or anybody else. And that's what you've got to get really good at, is speeding that process up. The other thing I learned tremendously was scripting. And I would do, by the time I stopped doing comedy, Daniel, I was doing, you know, I would do an hour on stage, maybe an hour and 15 minutes, and every single word was scripted. I mean, down to the word. And it was simply because I wanted to make sure that I had the best word I could use in that situation. I didn't need any extra words because you wanted to get to the punchline as quick as possible. And so it was literally, this is back before everybody carried a laptop, I had notebooks full of jokes that I would write and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. So I learned a lot about scripting, because for a salesperson or for a leader, when you encounter the same objections to your ideas or to your philosophies or to your beliefs, you're going to generally encounter the same objections over and over. There's very seldom going to be one that comes out of left field that you've never heard before. And when I work with salespeople and business people, I always tell them, if you know what they're going to say, then you darn sure need to know what you're going to say. And if somebody were to come up to one of your listeners right now and ask them their phone number or their social security number, they could just rattle it off because it's just second nature. It just rolls right off their tongue. Well, the same thing needs to go for how to overcome an objection or a challenge to your philosophies or how you're going to defend a point. And I got really good at scripting and then making it sound planned, not canned. And you do that through, I found out what a great tool my voice was. And I don't necessarily mean just your voice inflection, but the cadence and the pacing and pausing for effect. And you don't realize what a tool your voice is. And when you have to stop and search for a word. Now, I knew exactly what I was going to say just then, but you have to get to where you can almost act it out like an actor in a role. It amazed me because and everybody that's been to a comedy club or watched a comedian on TV has had the same reaction. That guy is so funny. Boy, he just thought of that. He is so quick. Man, he's quick. No, I've been doing that same line 46 nights in a row, and I'm going to do it tomorrow night in Des Moines. But you have to sell them on the idea that they're hearing it for the first time.
Right.
And so that's really what I learned there. And for other leaders, I try to explain to them that when you're in any position of leadership, whether you're a teacher in front of students, whether you're an administrator in front of other teachers, you have to sell people on your ideas, your philosophies, your beliefs, and really the direction that you want to take into your class, your school, your organization, your department, or whatever.
Yeah, that's already powerful what you've shared. We could hit stop, and it's a value-packed episode. I really love the idea of scripting out responses. And you know, what I want to pull away from my listeners, I hope they caught this, but yeah, we know the objections that are going to come to the new initiative or whatever, you know, you're trying to work through in your school. We often do know them. If not, you know, that we experienced it at another school, it's maybe the same objection that's been shared in your school, but you keep running into it. And so just the intentionality behind scripting. So in your case for comedy, but in the school leader's case, you know, why does this make sense, these shifts that we're asking teachers or students to make, and really having it thought out and even down to the word? So I'm assuming, you know, that's something that you would recite, and correct me if I'm wrong, so that, you know, it was memorized and then you could deliver it in a way where it sounded natural. But if I heard you correctly, you wrote out every single word. You thought deeply about which words would have the most impact, and then you made that a part of almost your identity as you went up there to perform.
Absolutely. And the example I give everybody, if you think about it, everybody has seen the movie A Few Good Men and the memorable line of Jack Nicholson, "You can't handle the truth."
Right.
Now, what you have to understand is that when he got that script, he looked at a piece of paper and it said, "You can't handle the truth." It had five words on it.
Right, right, right.
And they were all, they weren't probably bolded. The font wasn't changed. It just said, "You can't handle the truth." But now, that's not how he delivered that. He delivered that to where you could feel it in every fiber and ounce of your being.
Yeah.
And he delivered it with passion and with feeling. But if he would have just read those same words and if they'd have said, he said, "You can't handle the truth," we would have forgotten it.
Let me try. You can't handle the truth.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just a throwaway line. But it's one of the most memorable lines in movies because of how he said it. So it's not so much the words. Those are important, but it's how you deliver them. And the more comfortable you are with what you're going to say, the more comfortable you will be with how you say it. So don't ever go into a meeting or a conference or anything, even to a sales call or whatever, where you're thinking, "Boy, I hope they don't say this." Because everybody always says, "I hope they don't throw this one at me." Well, if you know they're going to say it, you surely need to know what you're going to say in response. It's just like lines in a play.
No, that's perfect. And before we move on, I want to hone in on one more point. You talked about the power of first impressions. I like how you describe it too, that you just have a whisper to, in terms of time to actually deliver while you're on stage. You said that you figured out a little bit how to speed up that process, right? So what practical tips could you give school leaders, you know, new to a building or even if they've been around? How do you speed up that first impression and win people favorably over to your side?
It is probably one of the greatest things that I ever learned from the great Zig Ziglar. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And when I would hit the stage and immediately put the turn the show and make it about the audience instead of about me, all of a sudden I was one of them. They were on my side. There was no longer that wall between us. So the sooner you can put yourself on the same side of that wall as your staff or your administration or whatever, the more quickly that trust will build.
How'd you do that as a comedian, though? Like, how do you communicate, you know, "This show is for you. I care about you. I'm on your side of the wall," like you said. And our listeners will be able to adapt that into the school context. But, you know, some of our leaders, right, they're going to struggle with vulnerability and building relationships with people, which is exactly the wrong approach to take because they need to know that you care. But I'm just very curious, like, what are the steps? Like, how do you do that as a comedian? Because I think our leaders could steal it and then use it in their environment.
Number one, know your audience. If I was going into Lincoln, Nebraska, I would get the newspaper and I would hit the stage and I would talk about something that was topical to them. I'll never forget, I'm going to date myself. I was working the Funny Bone in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the night after the O.J. Simpson chase on TV, where everybody cut into the NBA game and we're watching this white Bronco drive down the freeway in L.A. and every channel has it on and so forth. The next night, I'm headlining the Funny Bone in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They introduced me. I walked onto the stage, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was probably one of the biggest first responses I ever got. I said, you know, folks, I'm just glad to get the show started. Have you ever had one of those days where you feel like, you know, that every cop that's on the highway pulls in right behind you and you're watching that rearview mirror? I said, so I'm driving in here tonight in this white Ford Bronco. And it was just right then they were just putty in my hands.
Gotcha.
And it was just because I took time to make it topical, and they knew this guy's not going to get up here and just give us the same old jokes he's given everybody. So the first joke out of the box was always something specifically for them.
Yeah, I really like that. And, you know, a lot of times as leaders, I don't know if it must be pride or just thinking that, you know, we have the best ideas ever. But just doing the work of thinking through what's it like for a teacher to go through this change, or what, you know, what's their experience day to day like, students, community, et cetera, et cetera. You need to do that type of work to really impact your people. And if you just think you have a great idea because you read it in some research journal or worked at your old school somewhere else, like, that's not good enough. You need to bring it from their perspective, really understand where they're coming from.
You know something, Daniel, too, that a lot of times when I'm working with salespeople, I tell them that too many times salespeople are like school teachers.
How about
and
that?
That we have A customers who they're the people that, you know, they buy from us all the time, they pay their bills, they love us, they send us referrals. We have our B customers, kind of like B students. They're not quite as good or as big as the A customers. They don't do quite as much as them, but boy, they're solid. We have our C customers who are probably, they're the ones that are just maybe testing us out for the first time. They're kind of on the fence. They could go either way, maybe new. And then we have our D and our F customers who are like D and F students, and they're the ones sitting in the back of the room causing problems. They're everything is our fault. They, you know, we have to chase them for money as a salesperson. You know, they're trying to game the system. And sadly, a lot of times like teachers, we end up spending all of our time with our D and our F customers, and who does our competition want?
Right.
They want our A's and B's.
Yep.
And too many times we spend our time with the D's and F's because they're the ones that make the most noise, and we ignore the A's and B's.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and by ignoring our top performers, you know, they might get dissatisfied, go somewhere else, or become less motivated and that sort of thing. It's a real risk. In schools, we talk about how to help those kids that are struggling, and we should. That's our job, is so that,
absolutely,
you know, every kid learns. But the flip side of that, too, and we don't think of this enough, is but don't ignore the students that are doing well. How do we push them even further? How do we challenge them even more so that their learning is equally extended and challenged and pushed?
Absolutely. And you know, the thing about it is that too many times they're the ones that I guess get sacrificed and we ignore.
Exactly. So Butch, you know, you've shared some really, really great practical tips about leadership, how we could become better leaders in schools. You know, what would you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, wow. My worst leadership mistake. You know, I don't know that there's one that jumps out at me all real quick, but I can tell you the one that I try to coach people around as best I can is, and I just gave a presentation recently called Hire Hard, Manage Easy. And I think too many times we try to, when we have a position to fill, we grab the first person that has a pulse and can fog a mirror, and we plug them in thinking we're saving ourselves when really we're causing more problems than we're solving. As I look back on my career, the times that I really took my time to find the right person for the right position was the times that those people stayed the longest. They were the happiest. They performed the best. Both of us were stress levels were greatly reduced instead of trying to force the square peg into the round hole. I think too many times we grasp at the first thing that comes along because we think, okay, well, this will solve the problem. No, we're band-aiding it instead of solving the problem. And a lot of times for leaders, that exacerbates the problem because now we've got somebody that's not doing the job. And many times that's worse than not having anybody at all. And yet we fear having an open spot. And, you know, at least we know what we got with an open spot. And when you put that bad person in there, you got to get them out before you can get a good one.
Yeah, it's, you know, Ken Williams was on this podcast. He's a big time just educational, you know, thinker and consultant. He's done years and years of service. Awesome guy. Great episode, top 10 for the better leaders. And he said the same exact thing. So it really is important. Jim Collins talks about it, you know, getting the right people on the bus.
Exactly.
I'm reading Creativity Inc., which is a story of Pixar. And Ed Catmull was one of the founders of Pixar. And he takes it just a step further. And he talks about having the right people and then the right environment for them also to thrive. So, because he was often pulled, is it a person? Do we value the person more than the ideas, or the ideas over the person? And he suggests, you know, you can't have those great ideas unless you have the right people combined with the right environment so they can produce the best ideas.
Excellent. I agree 100%. You know, you alluded to earlier the talk I gave in Texas. It's called Success is Just a Decision Away. And I think as leaders, a lot of times we have to simply make the decision to move forward and be successful. And too many times we get caught up in how we're going to be successful and why we're going to be successful. And we think it's magic and it's this elusive thing. And I believe that literally success happens at the moment you make that decision. And as you know, I shared several examples there in Texas, but once you make that internal decision, something happens inside of our brain. The example I love to give, I quit smoking January 1st of 2009. Now, I made the decision to quit smoking in December of 2008. And I had smoked for many, many years. Heck, I worked for a tobacco company at one time. I was good at it. You know, I was a professional smoker. But when I decided to quit that time, it was a conscious decision, and something was different about it. I was ready to quit, and I just decided that I was going to quit. Now, I'd quit a bunch of times before, but I think somewhere in the recesses of my brain, there was a change that took place then that all of a sudden I was no longer a smoker trying to quit. Now I was a non-smoker. So I still had the same withdrawal symptoms. I still had the same problems that I had had the times before I tried to quit. But this time it was different because the decision had already been made. All that was left was for me to follow through. Now, in schools, the DARE program that they teach down here in the South, the Drug Abuse Resistance Education, they teach children to make decisions to say no to drugs right there in the classroom while they're not under peer pressure. So that when they get out on a Friday or Saturday night with their friends and they're offered drugs or alcohol, it's not a question of yes or no. That decision's already been made. And so I think for leaders, a lot of times, once we decide to move in a certain direction, we need to make that decision and the rest is just follow through.
It's a really good point, you know, and the power of, you know, putting a flag in the sand, you know, saying today's the day that I'm going to be successful or whatever you're working toward. And that's the foundation. That's the moment.
Right.
It's hard to do it on your own. Like, so what other steps or how did friends, family, community also help you be successful once you got your mindset correct?
Well, the first thing I did was I had an accountability group, and I didn't know it at the time. It was one of these serendipitous things. I had no idea that I was doing anything different. I just put on Facebook, I'm quitting smoking January 1st. And all of a sudden, everybody's, oh, okay, you got this. And then I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what have I done now? And yeah. So January 1st, I put Butch is now a non-smoker. Like. And I was getting this feedback. And so I started, you know, okay, Butch is celebrating 7 days without a cigarette. Like, oh, man, you got this. You're inspiring me to quit. And now all of a sudden, Daniel, I wasn't quitting for myself. I had these other people that were depending on it. I couldn't start smoking again.
Wow.
I would let all these people down. So I always tell people, when you make a big, bold, set a big, bold goal, whatever it is, I had a sales manager I was talking to recently about their team, and we're talking about setting goals. And he said, well, I don't want them to set a big goal, bold goal and get discouraged. Let me tell you something. I would much less, I'm less worried about discouraging somebody from barely missing a big, bold goal than I am about encouraging them when they hit a small one that's all they're worth.
Right.
And I want somebody to set a big, bold goal. Then I want you to shout it from the mountaintops. I want you to tell everybody about it. I want you to have all these people as accountability partners. You mentioned my heart surgery and that I'd run the 5K. When I was in cardiac rehab, one of my cardiac rehab specialists there, his name was Dominique, and he asked me one day, he said, Butch, what are you in here for? And I said, I had heart surgery. He said, no, what are you in here for? Cardiac rehab? He said, no, what are you in here for? And I think, I got you. I said, I have no idea why. I said, I want to run a 5K. And that's been over 7 years ago, and I'll never forget the next words out of his mouth. His exact sentence was, we're not going to let heart surgery stop us. We're not going to let heart surgery stop us. So now I had an accountability partner. And I can remember that they started letting me literally, I was on the treadmill for like 2 minutes walking at like a 3.5 mile an hour pace. And that is just, you're not even moving at all. And then I want to run. No, you can't run. I want to run. No, you can't run. And they'd let me run for like 10 seconds. And then they let me run for 20 seconds. And then I could run for 30 seconds at a time that I'd have to walk for a minute and a half. And it was in 2 minute chunks. 30 seconds, then walk for a minute and a half. Then they got to where they'd let me run for 45 and walk for a minute 15. Then I could run for a minute and walk for a minute. And 190 days after heart surgery, I ran my first 5K in 36 minutes and 45 seconds, and I didn't walk a step of it.
That's amazing. You're an inspiration, Butch. And it reminds me of a recent podcast I listened to on the Principal Center Radio with Dr. Anthony Muhammad, and want to give Roxana a big shout out for turning me on to that episode. It deals with a lot of race and privilege issues. And the guest is talking about how we fail kids from certain areas and cultures. And the thing is that we have these biases as educators a lot of times. And it's this mindset of, you know, this kid can't do this because of where they come from or what they look like. And that's the same sort of bias you are facing too, in the sense that I'm in here because of this cardiac arrest, right, or cardiac rehab. But what Dr. Muhammad says and what you're saying too, you got to reframe how you look at the situation. So with our kids, why can't we expect all kids to be in AP classes, honors classes, and doing exceptionally well? Why not? We can. And if we had that, if we truly had that belief, it would change how we interacted with those kids. Same thing with you. You could play the victim, right? You talked about Zig Ziglar. He talks about that poor old me syndrome, right?
Right.
And you could have had that. And, you know, keep living probably a very average, maybe comfortable life. But instead, you decided to have the mindset, I'm in here to train for a 5K. Even though, yeah, the evidence, the history, I had this cardiac arrest, I'm going to do something big and bold. And like you said, you shot it from the mountains, and there you are, successful. So love that story. Thank you for sharing it.
One of the things I tell people all the time is that your location is not your destination.
Right.
And I'm going to say that again because I think it's important for people to understand. Your location is not your destination. So your station in life, whether it's physical, financial, your actually your geographic location, that's not necessarily where you're going to end up. If it were, you'd be in a box and there'd be a whole different podcast going on. People would be crying and it'd just be, you know, game over.
Right.
But we all have detours in our life. The whole idea behind it is don't let a detour become a derail. And you've heard me talk about this before. If we were to get in the car there in Chicago and drive to Los Angeles, we could make it. If we say, okay, we're going to make the decision, we're going to L.A. Now, we're probably going to have to stop for gas, but we're not turning around and going back to Chicago just because we need gas. If we have a blowout in Milwaukee, we're not going to turn around and go back just because we had a blowout. If we get to, you know, Las Vegas and
so close the roads closed.
we're going to find a way over around. We'll find a detour, but we're not going to let it be a detour. We're not going to turn around and go back home. But for some reason, when you talk about success or accomplishment or achieving a goal, the first little time somebody says, okay, I'm going to go do this, and the first hiccup, the first time they have a flat or they have to stop for gas or they get tired, they go, well, I guess it wasn't meant for me. I'm going to go on back home. No. Dr. Randy Pausch, one of the greatest educators this world has ever known, in the last lecture said, the brick walls are not there to keep you out. They're there to keep the people out that don't want it as bad as you.
Right. Yep. Some people need to hear that today. And Butch, anytime you want to hop in a car and drive to L.A., I love California. So.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Let's pause here for a message from our sponsor. Today's show is sponsored by KickUp, a professional learning data analytics company that provides an easy-to-use platform, helping school leaders optimize their PD resources and efforts by soliciting and synthesizing teacher input on professional development needs, creating an intuitive and simple dashboard so leaders can take immediate and informed action to support teachers, measuring and reporting the impact of the PD efforts over time. Schools, districts, and charter networks leverage KickUp's platform and consultative support to synthesize data so that all stakeholders, administrators, coaches, and teachers can monitor progress, identify meaningful professional learning actions, and demonstrate and share impact. Learn more at kickup.co. Today's show is also brought to you by the What Great Educators Do Differently conference. That's October 14th and 15th in Kansas City, Missouri. Here's two reasons why you should attend. The variety. At each What Great Educators Do Differently conference, you will experience a wide range of presenters speaking, including current classroom teachers, building administrators, practicing superintendents, and best-selling educational authors. In addition, we schedule a variety of sessions from large traditional keynote presentations to small breakout sessions to opportunities to connect during many unconference sessions. Plus, there is incredible value. Our conference fees are priced below the fees charged at professional learning events of similar duration and quality of speakers. We work hard to keep the cost of attending our conference as affordable as possible while providing worthwhile learning throughout the event, from the opening keynote to the lunch and learns to the social networking event to the closing keynote. Check it out and register at WGEDD.com. Leading a school may be the most difficult job in the world, but what if I could guarantee that you could accomplish so much more in 1 year than you've been able to in any years past? The secret is to stop leading in isolation and to do so in community. The solution is to join one of my education masterminds. We meet weekly for an hour and discuss leadership and solve complex problems. Text Better Mastermind, that's all one word, to 33444. That's Better Mastermind to 33444 and start your journey to your best year ever. Now, back to the show. So how do you avoid distractions and stay focused?
You know, that's a constant challenge for me, just because I love to do a lot of different things. I try to, I'm one of those people, you were talking about the reading in the podcast, I read two or three books at a time. I'm one of those people that I'll have literally two books going at once that I'm different places in. I listen to podcasts. I think it's important to try to stay centered and set those goals and what I call mile markers. And again, back to using a running example, you can't run a marathon from the starting line. When I wrote my last book, you know, you can't sit down at a computer, typewriter, whatever, to write a book. You just can't. You sit down and you can't even sit down and write a chapter or a paragraph. You can sit down and write a word. That becomes a sentence. That becomes a paragraph. That becomes a chapter. So to me, it's important that we have mile markers in our lives, and that once we set that big, bold goal, whether it's, you know, to, and then just to speak to your audience, to improve test scores by 20% in a 3-year period. Well, guess what? That's 36 months. And it's really easy to get discouraged when something's 36 months away from fruition. But if you see that they're up 3% in the first 90 days and you're taking these mile markers and checking them off and watching yourself climb, then it becomes very encouraging instead of discouraging.
Well, that's good. You send those mile markers and celebrating small wins along the way so that you do achieve that big, bold goal if it's 36 months or more out.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Butch, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
I tell you, I'm reading Procrastinate on Purpose by Rory Vaden, and it is really a strong book for all leaders on how we think we're busy so many times and we're really not. It's got some great principles in it on how the truly hyper successful people spend their time and truly how much time we waste on inconsequential things.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And the listeners, that book is great. Like I said, I'm connected with Butch in similar masterminds ran by the same guy, Aaron Walker. And that book definitely has my stamp of approval. I think we'll probably read it in my mastermind for school leaders. And just one other reason to get the book, Rory gives you a funnel system of how to handle every decision. And it's a protocol, so to speak. And if it doesn't, you know, meet this criteria, that criteria, and that, I don't want to give it away. I want you to get the book. But it's just a great way of making decisions and helps you stay really only doing what the most important work is. Butch, what do you do for fun?
I enjoy writing, spend time with my wife. We're empty nesters now. We have 3 grown children. We don't have grandchildren yet, but we go out as much as possible. We've got a pool in the backyard, so we hang out there in these Louisiana summer times. At this point in my life, I try to relax as much as possible, and I'm one of those people that never really learned to relax. I'm wound pretty tight, so yeah. I don't play golf. I don't hunt. I don't fish. So many times, Daniel, the things that I do for fun, other people would consider work, like writing or reading or doing something creative.
Gotcha. Hey, will you share that real quick story of what your daughter did for you? I don't remember if it was for birthday or for Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, this is a pro tip for anybody in a relationship. This could be for your husband or wife, too. And you'll think, I want the emails to be sent to Butch and me because it's going to pay off big. This is very touching.
Yeah, my daughter Whitney is, we're actually going to get to go see her. She lives just outside of Nashville. Her husband's a professional drummer, and she, for Christmas, got me, she made it herself. She is a graphic designer. She has a degree in art, and she's just the most creative, thoughtful young lady. I love her to death, and I love all 3 of my children, but she, for Christmas last year, she gave me, it was a little mason jar, and she had taken 52 little scraps of paper, art paper, and in different colors of watercolor, had colored the papers, and then on each one of them, she wrote 52 weekly reminders of why I love you. And every Monday morning, I take the rubber band off the top of that mason jar, reach in blindly, and pull out one. And so every Monday morning, I get my dose of Whitney. And it's everything from, I think one of them was my awesome dance moves to jokes are better when I tell them to how I got her out of a speeding ticket or things I've done for her. And, you know, things that it just makes me smile. I love it. It's just one of the most thoughtful gifts. I got it for Christmas, and this was Monday today. We're recording this on a Monday. I opened that jar this morning and started my week with a smile.
Yeah, that's such a great idea. And like I said, email Butch and myself because that's going to pay off in the long run.
Yeah, no kidding. All you guys that score points are, yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm participating in the largest research project ever of rock, paper, scissors because I want to become the world's champion.
All right.
So I'm just curious, if we were playing, what would you throw first, rock, paper, or scissors?
I would probably throw rock.
Okay, very good. Just I'm gonna write that down. I'm collecting my data. So we have a few crazy questions I'm gonna ask you. I think you'll enjoy it because you have that comedian background. I stole all these questions from Reddit, but these are just would you rather questions. So
okay,
would you rather, Butch, to have baby teeth or baby hands for the rest of your life?
Baby teeth. I think I could get around eating what I would want to eat, but especially writing and doing the things I do with my hands, I'd want my regular hands.
I love how people answer these. I just have so much fun. There's a few more. We're not going to do like 20 or 1,000.
That's right. I love this. This is great.
Would you rather have legs as long as fingers or fingers as long as legs?
Oh, wow. legs as long as fingers or fingers as long as legs? Probably legs as long as fingers. I think fingers as long as legs would be very hard to manipulate and work your way around. Again, my hands are really important with writing and so forth.
Good. You're 2 for 2 so far. Would you rather have a slight magnetic pull on all bread within 10 feet of you, or any time you're within earshot of eggs, they talk quietly but continuously about you?
I will attract the bread. I have one of those hypersensitive brains that the eggs would drive me nuts talking about me. Yeah.
Would you rather fight a bear underwater or a shark on land?
Ooh. Would I rather fight a bear I'm going to think about this one. I'm going to say I would probably rather fight the shark on land, because bears, the claws probably still pretty dangerous underwater. But, you know, I've heard of these people punching a shark in the nose and he'll run. and I doubt he could get around on land as well as that bear could get around underwater.
True. Okay, this is the last one. Would you rather be able to fast forward time or rewind time?
Oh, can you choose neither? But if I had to do anything, I'd rewind time and tell my younger self to soak it all in when my children are young, and don't start looking for the good old days, because a lot of times we're living right in the middle of the good old days.
That's right. All right, Butch, well, you made it to the end. This is the last question. I just really appreciate you. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top 3 priorities building this school?
Oh, wow. First of all, I would go out and hire a staff of musicians, artists, writers, painters, sculptors, dreamers to come in and help build it. Those are the things that I think kids need to learn. As you know, and I don't want to offend any English teachers, but I haven't conjugated a verb or conjugated a sentence or whatever you did with conjugate since I got out of school. But I tell you what, the creative sciences and the music that we're losing in school, and teaching kids to dream and think, I think is so important. So that's probably the first thing I would do. The second thing I'd do is probably get out of their way and let them do it. And the third thing I would do would be to make sure that the every student had 3 nutritious meals a day, that they knew that coming to that school, they were going to not come on an empty stomach, that they were going to have their body fed as well as their brain.
That's awesome. Butch, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
First word of advice is, listen to all the stuff Daniel says. I love this guy to death. We've hit it off. We've not just share some mutual acquaintances, but we've become friends. And number one, thank you so much for thinking of me to be on what has turned out to be, I understand, a phenomenal podcast for you, brother. So I really do. I'm flattered that you'd invite me. For all of your listeners, you can go to butchbella.com. It's BELLAH. So it's BUTCHBELLAH.com. You can see the blog post, video blogs, so forth and so on there. You can follow me on Twitter at Butch Bella, BUTCHBELLAH. Also you can go to butchbella.com/betterleaders, and I've got a free download of a little ebook I put together called Funny Business, and it's how stand-up comedy made me a better salesperson. I think there's probably some nuggets in there that would be great for your school leaders.
Well, Butch, that's extremely generous, and we'll have that all linked up in the show notes. So Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Butch. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Butch in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Butch, thanks again so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
My pleasure, Daniel.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.